Hello, welcome to the Northern Business Podcast. This is a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and have got new ideas to help our economy grow. Now, the Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR, and we serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which are occasionally on the podcast. We're sponsored by Virtue Motors PLC, one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands, and also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and today presenting with me is Caroline Walker. In the studio today, we've got Mike Hughes, who's the business and commercial editor at the Northern Echo. And down the line, we have Stuart Dixon, who is the CEO at Weardale Lithium. So we've got interesting people to talk to and interesting things to talk about. Have you had a busy week in business?
I've had a very busy week so far, Graham. Probably a lot like Mike. A lot of my work's been budget prep because clients want to talk about the budget. They're a mixture of excited to see what's going to happen and dread. I think in equal measure that already I've got clients commenting in The Guardian, on Channel 4 on budget day after the budget, which will be fantastic. We'll also obviously be preparing lots and lots of quotes from all our business clients really to pass on to the likes of the Northern Echo, so that they have got some almost instantaneous reaction from the...
It is interesting. A lot of national firms call us up because we're based in the north of England. And the north of England has a voice now in the national media. It didn't have about 10 years ago. And people who are running national outlets like to know they've got voices from our region.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Channel 4 do have their studios in Leeds, which is fantastic. And that's where they're doing their budget coverage from. Hence, we've got some people from Yorkshire and from the north, travelling across there on budget day, which would be absolutely brilliant.
I've been busy preparing for something. I've been doing a lot of homework today, and it's something we'll talk to Stuart about in a minute. And it's coming up on the 7th of November. It's called the Northeast Future Resources Conference. It's about critical minerals, recyclability, and I've been finding out some amazing things. For instance, I was talking to a company that's going to be represented there, Altilium. And this company, Altilium, has got a pilot plant that is built in Devon, or is it Cornwall, but certainly the southwest. And this pilot plant recycles old electric vehicle batteries, things that might have been in older electric vehicles, original Renault Zoes or Nissan Leafs. And they crush them up and they create a product called Black Mass, consults notes. Black Mass is a product that consists of the chemicals within the batteries. And normally, and this happened quite often, this black mass is exported to China, and China then break it down into the critical minerals that it has and the valuable minerals like lithium and cobalt and magnesium and put them into car batteries. But this company has got the technology to do that, and its pilot plant is producing one new EV battery a day. Anyway, I was talking to them, and they said they are intending, once they've got their funding secured and it's looking good, to open a proper plant that will commercialise the production of recycled EV batteries. And it will be located in the north of England, probably in the northeast of England, which is a really big story. And there'll be an announcement about that apparently in the new year.
It'll be a bit of a game changer really for the EV industry, won't it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm interested in that, obviously, because I drive an EV and have
So unfortunately, I only have a hybrid. Now it's full blown.
It's my fifth year now. And I mean, I've seen just over the two EVs that I've had how much better battery life is. But the thought of actually, because they do say that, well, the EVs do obviously have their environmental credentials, there's still that worry underneath that perhaps the battery is the one stumbling point on them being, you know, really well and properly green. So the thought that all the recycling is going into the batteries, I think.
That's absolutely. The other thing that I thought, I agree with you on the sort of green element, but on the practical element, I asked the lady doing my research for this conference, I said to her, this shows my amateurism. I said, once you've broken it down and produced a recycled battery, will you get the same amount of power from the recycled battery?
As good as a,
And here's the thing. She said, yes. I thought, well, why? And a friend of mine in our team was saying to me, well, it makes sense. If you open a can of Coke and you drink the Coke and you've got the can and then you go and have the can recycled, there's still enough material in it to produce another pan of Coke. And
which is as good as the one that you drank out of originally.
It's utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike, we'll catch you on this in a minute, but what do you think of that? It sounds like you should come to the conference.
I mean, it's amazing stuff. It really is so much that's happening in this region. It was science fiction. Yep. You couldn't have invented all these sorts of things all these years ago. But the drive, the innovation here, and the fact that we're clearly building some sort of an astonishing energy cluster across the whole region.
Mm.
Just complete game changer, really.
Well, it is science fiction, is our next guest, Isaac Asimov. We've got Stuart Dixon on. He's joining us from Weardale Lithium. Stuart, welcome. Just very quickly, tell our listeners and viewers what you are doing in the North Pennines.
So Weardale Lithium's seeking to sustainably produce lithium carbonate for batteries to go into electric vehicles, be a domestic supply of lithium and being able to scale up in the Northeast and have an integrated supply chain in the Northeast to serve what will be our future vehicle fleet in the UK. And that's, coming down the road very quickly with the UK zero emission vehicle mandates. And the interesting discussion around range and recyclability is all part of that. And this will move from theory to reality and is a living experience for all of us going forward. So we're very pleased to play a part in that. We think it's a vital part to have a domestic supply of lithium because it's one of the most valuable and import-reliant parts of the EV construction.
The interesting thing about your lithium extraction is it isn't what people might imagine. I remember when I first talked to you, I thought lithium, that's what the African nations extract it by open cast mining, and you see it in salt flats in South America, and it looks a bit grim. But then you said no, and it's completely different. You take it out of water.
That's right. Essentially, we're a water management company to some extent. This is hot water, naturally occurring geothermal brines in the North Pennines. And consequently, we don't have to do any open cut or underground mining. We're sinking deep boreholes into the ground, so no visual impact. I think that's absolutely critical. And that enables us to provide a supply of lithium that's transparent. It's got a low carbon footprint. It's secure. And it has some cost advantages potentially, as well as a potential green premium to it because of its high environmental credentials. So we're really excited to be able to produce that. And we produce battery grade lithium carbonate very recently. We were our first company to produce lithium from these waters in the North Pennine. So we're really moving at pace.
I think we're probably showing our viewers, not listeners, obviously, some video of you looking at the site with somebody who extracted the lithium. And the boreholes are about this big. Have I got that about right? Maybe not. They're not huge. But we're showing people someone holding up a small test tube of white lithium granules. How much water did you have to extract to get that small test tube?
So this is millions of litres in terms of the scale of the endeavour to become a commercial production of 10,000 tons of lithium carbonate per year. So it varies between the ratio between water extracted with its lithium concentration and its other elements being concentrated in the water. And that changes as you scale up typically. So as we've started to scale up through offsite pilot plants, we will then be able to do that at scale subsequent to our planning application, which is currently being considered by Durham County Council. So, this is significant volumes of water. This is a proper industrial scale processing unit that we'll be developing at the former cement.
I appreciate that. I was just trying to drill down to the we put a picture on of the test tube being held up. You were familiar with the picture because you're in it. and that was a test tube of lithium. And I remember hearing that much lithium could maybe be used for a watch battery. And it takes, less than 20 litres of water to produce that?
Yeah, that's about right, yeah.
Okay. Mike, you were wanting to get in here.
I mean, it's just so fascinating to me. From a point of zero knowledge, Stuart, and I apologise for that, how did you know it was going to be there? What's the geology that makes it happen there?
This is a great story.
So the geology is really the driver in that the rocks chose us rather than we chose the northeast. And this is down to the geological endowment of the North Pennines being a radiothermal granite. So it's a naturally hot rock source, which enables the lithium to be dissolved at temperature at depth. And there's only two places in England where that geology exists, one being the North Pennines and the second one being in Cornwall. And they're doing the same type of activity down there. So we're making use of our natural endowment. And really, the story, I must give the credit to Newcastle University, who made those first exploration wells for geothermal exploration, geothermal energy, because they recognized the hot energy source. There've been a few false starts in trying to develop that concept. And really, we've been able to take on that work collaboratively with both Newcastle University and Durham University and a host of industry experts, really, to be able to produce lithium from those boreholes. So, you know, this has been an evolving story over 20 years to get to this point.
I think what the answer is a good story, that. Mm-hmm. I think, Stuart, it was fair to say, isn't it, that in a way the lithium was discovered almost by accident. It was a byproduct of other work. And there is a national map now from British Geological Survey of deposits around the country. But 20 years ago, it was a byproduct, wasn't really seen as essential.
Absolutely. The focus was just trying to create an energy source from the hot water. And there certainly wasn't any consideration of lithium. And what we've seen is a rapidly changing environment such that the demand for lithium has become acute. And the demand for lithium has also become more sharply brought into focus because of the lack of production in the UK and indeed Europe. This is a commodity which is dominated in supply by China, which controls something like 90% of refined lithium. So if we are to meet our targets of having a UK domestic car industry with all of the regulatory requirements around UK battery passport, rules of origin, where 65% of electric vehicles need to be, 60% of the value of an EV needs to be either sourced from the UK or Europe, you know, this is non-negotiable. This is mission critical for the future of our car industry, which accounts for around 10% of UK exports, particularly into Europe. So, you know, this is important stuff for the future of not only the Northeast, but I would argue the UK.
Yes, excellent.
It's so important that we have a UK-based production of things like this, because, I mean, we saw at the very beginning of the Ukraine war how many things were in shortages because things stuck in transit, and we don't really want to be at the behest of China, do we? You know, in producing things like this and make our industry reliant on it.
The other thing, China does have all this resource because they've bought up the supplies around the world on licensing. And if Chinese producers of battery electric vehicles are going to continue their dominance, they will call on this resource first.
Mm,
and they
absolutely.
Will, you know, you could have a new, 20 years' time, a new OPEC. You know, affecting the price.
I think, you can't ignore China in the global supply chain now, no matter what manufacturing or industrial processes you're involved in. I mean, they've had a long-term strategy which they've heavily resourced, and that is in stark contrast to the UK and Europe, which has had no industrial strategy, where they've arguably de-industrialized over most of their economies. And now, to some extent, that chicken is coming home to roost. And so really, you know, what we're talking about here is we'll need 80,000 tons of lithium carbonate by 2030, according to the UK battery strategy. And, you know, there is the potential to meet over 50% of that from UK sources, both in the Northeast and Cornwall. So the market is big enough for all of us to supply into it and provide to provide a UK-led supply of lithium into the EV and increasingly energy battery storage systems as well, which will be in every single home before we know it.
Stuart, just another one of those sort of slight curveballs from the journalist here. Is there still a concern about innovation versus infrastructure? It seems that the innovative side of it is racing ahead. There's a lot of amazing ideas. But is there still a concern about whether the actual electric vehicle infrastructure around the country is going to be able to be there and ready?
I mean, really, that's probably for others to comment on in terms of charging stations and things like that. But we do keep an eye on the infrastructure side of life. And I think, you know, it's certainly evolving and it's rapidly evolving. I think what you are seeing is clusters of focus, particularly in urban areas. I would argue probably London and the Southeast again because of population densities. But I mean, I took a road trip up from County Durham up to the north of Northumberland 2 weeks ago, and I was chatting to a friend up there, and you know, he'd taken his EV up there into some very rural areas. So I think that this is a customer confidence matter, and I think that most people now are getting their heads around it. And I think there's some really interesting innovation where we're seeing charging times coming down. We're seeing battery technologies where our lithium's being used getting better and more efficient. So I'm quite confident that the outlook is bright and the adoption rates will increase.
A sort of related question, just before we leave this, we'll keep you on for the next bit because we want to hear your opinions on the economy when we get talking about business, Sergio. But a sort of related question: you're obviously at it's been proven, but it hasn't been commercialized yet. What is your timeline? You know, if you were to take investments, and I know you are taking investments, City of London-based investors. When do they expect this to start to return investment? Because EVs, 2030 or 2035 is when they will be normalised. So within 10 years. Is this a within 10 years project, or do you expect it to be longer?
Absolutely. It's certainly well within 10 years. As I alluded to, we have now that we are in the latter stages of a substantial planning application for a pilot demonstration plant to be put in at Eastgate, County Durham, with a following wind. That will be operational by the end of next year, and that will be producing tons of lithium carbonate for battery manufacturers and OEMs and other interested parties. And so by 2027, we expect to be ramping that up into thousands of tons of lithium carbonate production in the Northeast. And, you know, we then have a modular scale-up plan where we can reach our full-scale production of 10,000 tons pretty quickly. So, and the market is already there now. So we're confident that we've got the right plan and we can deliver that in short order with the tailwinds of regulation and capital being swinging in behind us.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about EVs, but Caroline, at my house, although I've got a hybrid, not an EV, I also have an electric lawnmower and I have an electric carpet sweeper, battery operated, I mean, not electric. And so they need all this kind of lithium because these batteries need
the batteries. Yeah,
it's not just motorcars.
Yeah, no, same with me. I've just bought a hedge trimmer, which is rechargeable.
Yeah,
so much more easy to use. You can absolutely see the benefit of it.
And some of these things are made in the Northeast. Husqvarna, County Durham, these robot lawnmowers, which are all battery, they're going to need for their batteries lithium. So it's all very good. That's Stuart, stay with us. Let's bring in Mike.
Yeah. It's funny, Mike, you alluded earlier to the energy cluster and the great work that's going on in around our region. But did you actually pick up on the report from the Onward think tank in the week, which says that British entrepreneurs are running scared? People are actually frightened to start up their own business. But, you know, we have the Northern Echo. In the office every single day. And your pages particularly are just full of stories of innovation and great things happening across the north. Do you actually see any waning of that? Do you think that people are frightened of starting their own business?
No, I genuinely don't. I think in other parts of the country, I think we're in a bit of there's a window of time here in the northeast, and it might seem like it's long, but it's also really quite tight, in which in the next 5, 6, 7, certainly less than 10 years, we can absolutely revolutionise so many things because of the way things are going. And I think that encourages investment and encourages people to think, okay, I want to be part of the supply chain for this. And I don't think it exists so perfectly anywhere else in the country. So you can see other areas potentially having their sort of challenges. Here, I think it's an extraordinarily good place at the moment. People obviously are concerned, but when the budget is obviously coming up next week, that's a perhaps more crucial for many people than one for quite some years. So they're wondering, okay, which way is this government going to go? Which sort of government are they going to be? How are they going to do this black hole? Everyone's being prepared for the bad news. That's potentially making some people just pause. But I do think it's a pause. What we want is clarity. And as soon as they know, okay, this is what we're facing, however tough it is, let's just go for it.
Yeah, because you'd never call a business like Stuart's risk averse. Stuart's obviously not risk averse, is he? You know, or else he wouldn't be, going producing all this lithium. And you need people like that and businesses like that if we're going to keep innovating and actually be at the top of the game. You know, if we're going to have the factory in the north as well.
That's right. I mean, the innovation of businesses like Stuart's, having the confidence to have a long-term view.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're going to start drilling these test boreholes, have this testing station with an end game that can be some few years away yet. But they think, yeah, this is going to be the place. This is where it's going to happen. It's an astonishing place to be, this. Yeah.
Well, I am the most optimistic person. You know, I bounce around like Tigger talking about business. but a note of counterpoint on this. The budget is worrying people in business because I talk to people in business. And the interesting thing, Caroline, is we at our PR firm had lots of inquiries from media asking for people's views on things like the employment rights. And a lot of our clients have ducked and covered. They don't want to talk about it in public for being seen as being controversial or upsetting the staff or being an outrider. And the government has published its economic analysis of the employment rights bill. This includes statutory sick pay and reunion recognitions and so on. And it's all very glossy and says it will be all fine. Then buried, and this was all over the front pages of the newspapers recently, buried in there, it says, at this stage, we believe the direct costs to businesses will be in low billions of pounds a year. Oh, hang on a minute. Low billions of pounds a year? Well, what does that mean for the average business? It would be a modest increase of less than 1.5% on total employment costs. Oh, hang on a minute. 1.5%. Now, I run a business, I'm going to add that 1.5% to what happens in the budget next week on employment NI, and I might add it to employment NI being rolled out to pensions, and I might add it to minimum wage costs, and suddenly, we are low billions, a billion here, a billion there, then we'll be talking real money.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a concern, and businesses, as I say, are waiting to sort of see what sort of landscape's in front of them. I think there's a general thought that we're being asked to be to wake up and be realistic. Things need paying for, and then perhaps there's a certain way that has been managed in recent years, and now perhaps it's time for a fresh new way. If you want to use it, if you want to have certain things, you're going to have to pay for it. It's going to be a tough budget. Mm. But maybe that's part of our role, and that's say, okay, bring it on. What do we need?
Maybe it's going to be the short-term pain for the long-term gain. I'm sure that is what they're working towards.
We hope so.
We hope so.
Return on investment. Everybody wants that. Isn't investing in pain now.
We've got a typical businessman down the line. You see, I ask him about the budget. He's going to say, oh, look, it's a bit of problems for everyone. We'll get over it. It'll be fine. Because he's an optimist. Because people in business are. But sometimes you've got to realistically look at the cost. What do you think, Stuart?
I am an optimist. You have to be
a bit of a but
I am actually slightly alarmed by some of the leaking and the briefing that's been going on, because it is wildly divergent from manifestos. And I would just make an ask of all political parties that if they ask to be elected, they're actually honest about what they're planning to do, and they also are accountable with the delivery of that. I travel regularly with this job and internationally, and I think what's stark is that the quality of our services currently, the infrastructure required to develop businesses in the UK, is lagging materially behind Europe, the Middle East, and far afield. And that is worrying when the tax take has never been higher. So rather than take more from business and persons, I would ask government to be more efficient with what they currently take. And the levels of waste worry business. They irritate business because we cannot get away with it. We have to be efficient. We have to be ruthless with how we allocate capital and scarce resources. And the public sector should be no different. I also want to see a pro-growth, and I worry that the budget has been led with tax rises and with a little addendum of, oh, and by the way, we're pro-growth. Well, those two don't sit well in the same sentence. They never have done and never will. That's basic economics. And so I would rather see the government focus on pro-growth. Hiking CGT, hiking employer NIC are not pro-growth. They're anti-growth. Let's be absolutely clear about what it is. So let's really get behind this government to really focus on what we all want, which is growth, which is wealth, which is prosperity for all. And that means that we have efficient public services because we have an efficient public sector using our tax take responsibly. So, you know, if that can be done, then I'm bullish. But I am worried when I speak to young people. We're looking to create 125 jobs, high value science, technology, green energy jobs. And most of the young people I know are looking overseas because of quality of life and because of earnings potential. That needs to be arrested.
Well, look, I think it's a good last point to make. Before we go, so, Mike, quick plug for your newspaper, because I should imagine on Budget Day you'll be busy producing it. And that would be a good day, the day after, buy a newspaper, not just look at it on the telly.
Yeah, no, we go for it in depth. We want a full sweep of people. What do the families think about it? What do the young people think about it? What do the businesses think about it? So, yeah, we'll be collating all that together. And having some opinions of key things like what's going to happen with the Hitachi, what's going to happen with the duelling of the A66, key actual infrastructure issues there that will tell us an awful lot about this government. We'll be waiting to hear about that.
Right, Caroline, I think that's us done today.
That's us done for today.
Join us for a special budget podcast next week. We're going to conduct it at a financial planning business. It'll be done live after the budget. You can watch it on our LinkedIn site or on YouTube, or you can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. And if you want to join us as a guest on a future edition of Northern Business Podcast, feel free to get in touch. Get in touch via LinkedIn to Recognition PR, or Graham Robb, or Caroline Walker. Thanks to producer Harry Sinclair and our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time for the Northern Business Podcast.